Hey, peoples, this is the Conspiracy Oz Podcast. I'm your host, Mick Raven. It is Tuesday, 14th of November, 2023. This is a review covering alternative news and events. You can call +61 02 800 619 18 anytime. Drop me an email at conspiracyoz@protonmail.com. Go to the website conspiracyoz.com. Download the podcast from iTunes, Spotify, or podomatic.com. And get with the D program. Okay, so if you go to conspiracyoz.com like I have, you'll see one of the latest petitions I put up, and it's called an Australian cash and banking guarantee. And you're going, what? Because, you know, straight away you're thinking, well, what's the, we know that you want to get cash, but it's on the way out. So what's the point? It's a very good point what happened this week, and it does bring it back to nearly 10 million Australians in one hit, overnight, literally. So I put up the Cash is King, sign the petition. Okay, so it's got, the petition's called An Australian Cash and Banking Guarantee, change.org. So it's not an official government one, but it's for the people. So I've said, sign the petition, or else. And then I put up the story, latest one from the ABC, about the Optus outage. Now, a lot of people out there going, ouch, they know about it, because it's nearly half of Australia is hooked up to Optus, which is an overseas company called Singtel based in Singapore. So there you go. And it says more than 10 million customers were affected by the Optus outage. And it says, here's how it played out. Now you're thinking, what's this got to do with cash? Well, it's got everything to do with cash, because I've noticed in the store now, hardly anybody, it's just using the card itself, the physical card, and just about nobody's using cash. It's virtually stopped. But the phone is king, because it has the picture of the card on it with a direct link to your bank through the planet of the apps, because everyone is signing up. And that's the problem. As soon as your phone is knocked out with that provider, you can't access those banking details anymore, or the fake card on the phone, because you've broken the connection to the bank. And people have gone, I didn't think of that. No, you didn't, but now you are. So this came out on the 9th of November 2023, abc.net.au. It says, Optus customers were left furious following Wednesday's outage, which was not only an inconvenience, but cost businesses thousands of dollars and put lives at risk. Serious things, people. More than 10 million customers were affected across the country when one of Australia's largest telecommunication providers crashed, leaving people without phone service or access to internet for at least 9 hours. So it says the federal government has already announced an investigation into the outage. Well, go and ask Berejiklian. She's one of the top notches in Optus now. That's the former Premier for New South Wales that did a runner straight after COVID, if you remember. And it says they're going to ensure the industry learns any lessons from the incident. Oh, really? This is after Telstra's gone down. They all go down. This is the problem. Everything is being filtered, I should say, to a central point. Now, do you understand what happens when something is filtered to a central point and then that's hit? Everyone is affected. That's why you don't want a central bank digital currency running the whole world, because if that gets hacked or goes down or whatever, whether they do it on purpose or whatever, or promulgated, you'll think, wow, I can't do anything about this. And you really won't be able to do anything about it. Because remember, all of business to do with swapping money, the middleman. It's not about the actual products or the labor anymore. They don't want you to do something for a neighbor in return without cash. They don't want an exchange. They want to know about it. You understand, people? That's why in Melbourne, they just kicked out all the street vendors. These are all the Asian ones that you're selling the fresh produce. Kicked them off. Said, if you come back, $500 fine. Said it's a health problem, yet they've been there for eons. So you can see now it's not about the rules or even safety. It's about making sure there's no access to fresh food for that particular instance. But this is what they're doing. They just rubber stamp all these new laws, and suddenly you don't have anywhere to turn. And here we go again, 10 million people hooked up to a service that's supposed to be safe. It is not. And there was another hack again the other day. This was another big one with all the ports in Australia. Some ports had to close down, which means now all those Christmas pre-orders, or they might be delayed now. There might be lots of things delayed from overseas. And this is, again, people don't realise that once you put it all online, that's where all the cyber criminals are. They can't wait to get in through all those back doors and holes. And a lot of it is actually done with insiders. Okay, so this is a dangerous world that we've put ourselves in. And a lot of vulnerable people out there don't really want to be part of that and now being dragged into it. So I'll read on. So it says, businesses were one of the hardest hit, with many who rely on FPOS machines unable to serve customers and some forced to shut up shop as a result. Now, I also remember being in Bali many years ago now. I've told this story many times on the podcast. And we're in a place called Ubud, which is like the mountainous part of Bali. This is in northern Australia, just above Australia in Indonesia. So what happened is we're in the shop and the missus is buying a dress or something, and then there's a blackout and the FPOS machine stops working. Everything stops working. We just look at, we're in mid-sale. And the girl just smiles at us and says, "No worry, come back in 2 hours." And we thought, "What? Is this normal?" She said, "Oh, happened all the time. Come back 2 hours," smiles, which we did. But this is what's happened. And that's to do with blackouts, which are rolling blackouts are coming as well. That's another way they're going to hit us. But this is another one where they let the hackers go in and chew up the system to delay everything. And you think, oh, well, it's just a bunch of kids in China or Russia or somewhere else that are just getting into the systems. No, some of this is organized and meant to happen. People don't realize that these corporations have globalists sitting on top of them, giving them mandates. And they go, oh, that's silly. No, it's not silly. You go and have a look at some of these. Let's have a look at Optus. Let's go and have a look if there's a connection to any of those globalist fund managers that are hooked up with the elitists or the cabal or the whatever you want to call them, the Illuminati. They have all these names for them. They're just really rich, greedy people that just want us gone because there's too many of us. That's it. I'll have a look. One sec. Actually, before I get into who sits on the board, I just checked the Optus Wikipedia just to see if there was any major incidents before, because I remember reporting on something that was huge, and there was. In 2022, they had a massive cyber attack. Funny that. It says around September the 22nd, 2022, pretty much the same time, people, Optus Systems sustained a significant cyber attack that resulted in a major data breach of both current and former customers' personal information, including customers' names, dates of birth, phone numbers, and email addresses, with a smaller subset of customers having their street addresses, driving license details, and passport numbers leaked. It says Optus CEO, same one too, by the way, people, Kelly Bayer Rosmarin, urged customers to exercise heightened awareness regarding transactions with Optus and other accounts. Rosmarin emphasised that passwords were not compromised. The CEO said that the worst case scenario regarding the number of customers whose data had been leaked was about 9.8 million customers, but believes the number to be actually far lower. That's almost the same as the 10 million just got, just lost service. Makes you wonder what's going on, people. That figure sort of correlates around the same time too, a year before. It says on the 24th September 2022, Australia news outlets The Age and the Sydney Morning Herald reported that Optus was investigating the authenticity of a ransom demand of US $1 million made on a hacking forum. The demand gave Optus 1 week to pay the ransom in cryptocurrency, else the data will be sold for US $300,000 to whoever else wants it. On the 6th of October, the Australian Federal Police announced the arrest of a 19-year-old man, a teenager, people, who had allegedly threatened 93 Optus customers by saying that he would use their information leaked in the attack to commit financial crimes unless they paid $2,000. What an idiot. In response to the cyber attack, the Australian federal government announced emergency regulation on the 6th of October in the form of a 12-month amendment to the Telecommunications Regulations 2021. Geez, they're a bit late to the party, aren't they, people? To enable telecommunications companies to temporarily share approved government identifier information with regulated financial services entities. How smart. On the 11th of October, the Office of the Australian Information Commission launched an investigation, the aim of which was to explore the company's handling of customers' data. Nobody cares, people. That blew over. Everyone got on with it. They're back in Optus and they got hacked again. Well, this time they're not hacked, but it's sort of the same. You can't access your card. You can't access your, you can't do any transactions. No FPOS machines are working. Businesses are affected. It makes you wonder, people. And now they've even put the outage I'm talking about now in. So let's see what they say on the Wikipedia. Remember, this is thousands of editors. We don't know who they are. It says, early on the 8th of November 2023, an undetermined issue caused a nationwide outage in Optus mobile and fixed internet services. The outage directly impacted more than 10 million customers, including government services, hospitals and businesses. Optus mobile customers reported that their phones showed SOS on the signal indicator, which is a sign the regular network is down. It said, but mobile phones still have access to alternate networks in the event of an emergency call by using a so-called camping mechanism. Now, people need to know about this. See, at home, we've got internet that's home-based, but we've also got internet on our phones. So we've always got a way to get around having no internet if it happens. And everyone should be doing that. You should not get rid of your home internet service simply because it could be a lifesaver in an event that other services go down. You need multiple accesses. That's what I'm trying to say. So it says Optus landlines were unable to make emergency 000 calls. So that's always been the case, people. Not the landlines, because they're not really landlines. They're VoIPs, voice over internet protocol. They're not attached to the copper thing with the generators for the phone services. No, it's going to an actual service provider. If they go down, the phone goes down. It's the same thing. So a lot of people are starting to realize that now too. That's why the 000 calls don't work all the time. And also the fact that if you've just got a mobile and no home service, it's actually very hard for them to track where you are when you're calling 000 on a mobile phone. And it says, for safety reasons, it says, reading on, the outage affected the communication system for Melbourne's train network. Now, this is an overseas company running a train system. I mean, most of Melbourne is sold off anyway. Everyone knows that, especially the transport systems. That's another reason why Dictator Dan needed to go, people. I mean, the guy was shaking hands on the red carpet overseas all the time. And I don't mean red carpet in the West. I'm talking about someone else. Very dangerous. But he sold out and ran away too. So there's plenty of them that will be popping up on the COVID-19 class of 2019. Because it's just, it's the amount of money and runaway stuff these guys did was criminal. Absolutely criminal. And none of them should get away with it. Ever. Okay, even on the world stage. But at the moment, all that I'm focused on is what's happening in Australia. Okay, because there's enough of them to fill up a whole post that I've got to put up. It'll just be stuck on the side and you can access it all the time. That's what it'll be. And as they catch them all in the future, we'll be able to cross them off. But at the moment, they're all still running free, all these COVID hoax pushes back in the day. I wonder what would have happened to Greg Hunt, the federal health minister, the one that rubber stamped everything for the WHO. We'll have to chase him up too and see where he's at. But that's what I'll do. I'm still doing the update of it because just about all of them have quit. There's only a couple left, like Palaszczuk and Dr. Kerry Chant and a few others. That's it. They've all bailed, people. Do you understand in that 3 years where we got locked down, pointed at, demonized, lost jobs, got jabbed up with something we didn't want? These are the people that ran away. Straight after they realised. They got their bags of gold and they did as I were told. Whether they knew about it or not, they did as I were told and they did a runner when they saw the ship going down, the COVID ship. And it's still out there. People still are getting jabbed. It has a flow-on effect over years. It accumulates and eventually it'll get you. Okay? I'm not talking about COVID. I'm talking about the jab. Anyway, you'll see. It's happening already. We're up to 20 million plus. People go, no, we're not. It's only 6 million. No, this is what's happening to people. They have been affected by this jab that's actually bringing on heart problems and all sorts of other problems that people think are unrelated when they're actually directly related. That's a story for another day, but these people won't get away with it. Anyway, so finishing up here, it says the outage affected the communication systems for Melbourne's train work, so for safety reasons, the whole network was halted until backup communications commenced. leading to major delays and cancellations throughout the day. And even Uber was affected because they operate on mobile phones too. So people would have been thinking, oh, well, I'll just get an Uber. And then they ring up the Uber and they can't get one. It's just insane what goes on in this world, how nobody really looks at what is happening. Anyway, let's see who's sitting on the Optus board after that big segue, and we'll just see why this could have happened and why it may have been happening on purpose, okay? Because remember, they need to collapse businesses, and what a great way to hit 10 million people and all those small businesses by disrupting them, okay? Remember, Optus is not an Australian company, okay? All right, let's see who's sitting on the board. One sec. And I'll just mention this just on the end of the Wikipedia. It's got about outsourcing. This gives you an idea of what sort of company this is. It says, since 2005, Optus has outsourced some customer service functions to Concentrix and 247.ai, with the outsourcer providing 800 staff operating offshore in India, supplementing Optus's 3,000-plus onshore call service staff. Some functions have also been supplemented in the Philippines. And it says Optus uses 24/7 INC for telephone and chat-based offshore support. And it says in 2006, this is a long time ago, people, Optus announced that it would outsource 100 contracting jobs to another Singtel subsidiary, IT company NCS in Singapore. So you can see they've just about dumped everyone in Australia. And it's only by name that people think it's, yes, Optus, Australian. Not such. Anyway, here's the list. Okay, marketscreener.com, very hard to look at the company details now for major shareholders, but I managed to do it. So the main company is Temasek Holdings, which I've heard of. It's a Singaporean company. They've got like 52% stake of Singtel. Now, Singtel owns Optus. So they're the main shakers. But then you also got Capital Research Management, which is Warren Buffett. And you've got Norges Bank Investment, another big globalist fund manager. And of course, you've got Emirates, which is Saudi Arabia. So you can see everyone's got a stake in what goes with these sort of, big business decisions. Okay. And this is, remember, the opposition to Optus in Australia is Telstra, which is the government. But let's have a look at Telstra too, and let's see what the what's going on both sides of the fence, because in the end, it'll just be the two. I know there's Vodafone and there are other ones, but in the end, there'll just be two, because they have to play the red team off the blue team. They've always got to have this balance, and then the smaller players. Always like that. But let's have a look at Telstra. Let's have a quick look. I haven't looked at Telstra for a long time. One sec. Now, what a surprise. I haven't done a Telstra search for the market screener for a while, and they've got pop-ups now, so you've got to try and work out how to grab those major shareholders. They're not making it easy anymore, like it used to be in the past. But there it was. The top investor in Telstra is Norges Bank Investment Management, the same people sitting on the opposition of Optus. And you're thinking, what? There it is. I mean, that's another globalist company. Let's look up Norges Bank Investment Management and see which globalists are sitting on both sides of the fence. One second. And down the rabbit hole we go. The Vanguard Group are the top fund managers for Norges Bank. Then you've got Swiss Life Holdings, Credit Suisse, and it goes down. You can see Norges Bank Investment Management is part of that as well. And Fidelity's there as well. So you can see that it's all mixed up, both sides of the fence. So if I go and have a look at, let's go and have a look at the Vanguard Group. And you're going to probably see, this is one of the major fund managers in the world next to BlackRock. And they all sit on opposing boards. This sort of makes sense. I don't even need to do this. I don't want to get into the whole globalist shareholder market. You can see it's all mismatched. Okay, it's not red team versus blue team, really. They're all the same team, okay? When you start realizing that, then you realize whatever mandates the elitists at the top want, it flows down through that shareholder network, and they're on both sides of the fence. It's like, I've said this many times in the past, but when I used to work in the music industry, there was an Italian fellow that was the owner of the company I was in, one of the biggest companies in Australia. And he used to go to the horse races, and he said that at one stage he betted on all the horses in a race. And I just thought that was pretty crazy. But the analogy was that you can't lose. It doesn't matter what you bet on, you're not going to lose. And I thought that was odd, But it made sense that if you control the race, then you control the whole output, the whole way it works, in a sense. So these major shareholders are sitting on every board to control what happens. So if they want something to be hit and go down, there it is. I mean, Norges is sitting on Telstra and Optus. Norges has the Vanguard Group at the top of them. Vanguard's one of the biggest, you see what I'm saying, major shareholders in the world. Like fund managers for the elitists. That's what they do. They manage the funds for these, quiet achievers in the background who don't want to be named. Some of them are named, like Capital is obviously Warren Buffett. You can see who some of them are, but some of them are not named. Okay, you've got people like Bill Gates sitting there on all these boards, but you don't know which one, and he's sitting on opposing ones, and you don't know. But his best mate is Warren Buffett, so say no more. They learn off each other. But the target is us people. They just want less people. They think it's not much to ask if we just go away. But we, the problem with the big sweeping hand across the world, taking out anyone, it's collateral damage, just like with the Israeli-Gaza war at the moment, where the Palestinians are just getting slaughtered. And the rest of the world's going, oh, well, it's happening. And the Americans say, no ceasefire. And they're just letting them be killed. So you can understand now that there is no empathy for people when it comes to elitists, globalists, none at all. Okay? It's collateral damage that must be done so that they can clean the planet, because they want to save the planet, but for them, of the parasites, which is apparently us. So unfortunately, when they do the clean sweep, they don't care if you're good or bad. They don't care about any of that. You're gone. So you got to fight. Well, we're all gone. It's that simple, people. Anyway, I gave up a market screener looking for Vanguard, the major shareholders, because there's too many pop-ups. They obviously don't want people looking at it unless they can see who's looking at them. So I just did a general search thinking, well, I just want to see who the major shareholders of Vanguard are, because they're sitting on the board of Norges Bank, which is in both Optus and Telstra. And of course, everyone knows that you do sit on both sides for competition, but it looks to me like it's now being controlled from the very top. So you can see now that doesn't matter what company it is, if it's a big company, they're going to have these major fund managers on top of them if they're not a private company, okay? So it says on Yahoo Finance, I know that's just already funny, finance.yahoo.com, it says that the major institutional holder is BlackRock Incorporated. And that's since June 2023, so it's not up to date. But it just shows you people. Then Vanguard sit on their own major board because there's all offshoots of the same thing. They don't tell you who they are because this is American Vanguard Corporation, so it's not the global one. So that's what I mean. So you can see that Vanguard Group, that's the main one. We want to find out who's on theirs. But I just thought I'd jump the gun and just see who was on top. And it was BlackRock. No surprises there. So I'm just going to click on the Vanguard Group and see if I can do that within Yahoo Finance to see who the real big pushers are for the global group. All right. Now, so it's just bringing it up now. It's just bringing up a million pop-ups. So that didn't work. Bear with me, people. I'll have another search. One sec. This gives you some indication. When you do these crazy searches looking for globalists and looking for them personally to point the finger at, it's all shrouded in smoke and mirrors. It's very hard to get names. But eventually it comes out in the press because someone will say, I want to do this or I want to do that. And you'll say, who's that? Oh, Warren Buffett. Oh, it's Bill Gates. And then you start getting an idea of what companies they're aligned to and then what their portfolios might have in them. Because there's people wanting to copy them as well, people. It's not just us trying to figure out who the bad guys are. There are people that want to become bad guys. So it was no surprise to see that the biggest major shareholder of BlackRock was Vanguard. And so you see straight away that who are the people sitting on the Vanguard board? And you think, well, okay, you got to dig a bit more. So you can see how they break it all down. It's not an individual, it's just institutions. And you break it down, till you get all these hundreds, probably thousands of elitist shareholders all in the same club. And they all think the same people. This is how you know that there's a mindset and an agenda behind it, because it filters through all these major fund management companies to these institutions that then have their own boards, and you can see that bags of gold get passed under the table and how stuff gets done. It's just that on the global scale, and you can see why some certain people and personalities are targeted, because they don't fit in with the globalist structure and they don't do as they're told, like the Putins and the Trumps. There's plenty of them. But eventually they get sidelined. I mean, I'm telling you now, if Trump runs again, they will just shoot him. They will get rid of him, people. They're not going to put up with it. That's why this needs to be exposed really quickly before it gets to that stage. People need to suddenly stand up and stop this. It's just a bit like the ceasefire with the Gaza thing that's happening. People all around the world have had enough. They can see who's pulling the strings. They understand what is happening. But see, the globalists rely on the red team, blue team to push their narratives. They don't want you to see what they want to do as an agenda to save the planet for them. Longevity for them. Less people, us. Okay, that's all they want. That's what their goal is now. It's not about accumulating the most wealth in the world from all the plebs. They don't want the plebs anymore. Okay, they've got enough of that. And they've got technology to drive their modern futures. They don't need a slave market robotic. Well, they need robots. And robot is another word for slave. Look it up. But I'm saying they don't need the human slaves anymore. So they don't need clones. They just need us to be gone. That's where we're at the moment. Okay, big time. So if I look up BlackRock and see who their major, Vanguard, and see who their major shareholder is, I'll see if there's no surprises there. So let's have a look. Let's see if we can reverse that now. So we've got, I've got to get this right. I'm actually getting twisted in my own research because I'm doing it in real time. I'm not, this isn't being done prior. I'm actually doing this while I'm speaking. So it says BlackRock, this is just for people out there that don't understand really what I'm talking about when it comes to shareholders. BlackRock is not owned by a single individual or company. Instead, its shares are owned by a large number of individual and institutional investors. Okay? But of BlackRock, the biggest institutional shareholder, such as the Vanguard Group, and State Street are merely custodians of the stock for their clients. So that, you know, just to put it in perspective, that's all they are. It's just a name they slap on something to make you think it's an entity. Even though it actually is an entity, it's not the main source of the income that's coming. It's from the company. It's actually the individual investors that are putting money into that fund to then get their will done. That's what's happening here. All right. So if you think of a whole bunch of elitists sitting in a room, say 1,000 of them, and all have the same agenda, let's get rid of people, then all the companies they're involved with and all the major shareholders that they use as a smokescreen will then push that narrative, like climate change. Okay, because they want people to feel bad because they're breathing out. Get rid of the cows, they're making methane. So the idea is to kill dairy. So there's this is crazy. Like the people I know that are losing their thyroids, and it's because they may be just solidly eating just vegetables and have no iodine in their diet whatsoever, which you can get from kelp, like a Japanese diet of seafood will give them enough iodine. But this is a thing that people don't realize. They're going down a road they think is helping the planet, but in reality, it's just going to kill them. That's the whole point of it, is to make sure that the publicity for all these things that has been paid for by globalists through their major fund managers that sit on the board of all these major companies pushing these advertising and propagandist ideas on the public to get them to jump on board. And in the end, it's the detriment to their own health. As they end up in the hospitals, people dying of brain tumors at 30 years old. There are so many anomalies now. When I was growing up, none of this existed. And I know there were less people then. Doesn't matter. We had actual organic food, which is natural food with hardly anything in it, like chemicals and preservatives and all that. It was just natural. That's been thrown away now, and it's been completely changed. And Monsanto has come in and done the gently modified organisms. It's all the cat's out of the bag. And they're doing this on purpose. They want you to think you're saving the planet by going down this road where you just drink soy milk and not dairy milk. Then you get no iodine. People don't understand that certain things in their diet is there. And the reason we've survived so long is because we've developed our diets to survive. Whereas, like, the longest people on the planet that live are in Japan and in in Sardinia and Italy. And you think, well, what is it? Well, it's a seafood diet. It's fresh air. It's not a big rocket science thing. They also have a social network that keeps them all together as well. So it's something that's been going on for a long time, and we've had it changed over the last 100 or so years. It's been thrown in the toilet, and they just want us to go. Okay, very simple. They've made their dollars. It's time for us to go, they're saying. So they're going to squeeze and squeeze and squeeze until we're all gone. So you've got to start realizing now that we have been hoodwinked. All these supermarkets and all these save the planet stuff and do this and do that. It's all an agenda. It's all pushed at us so that we go down a certain road and we can't get back. Okay, they're trying to kill us off. The pandemic didn't work. It only took out 20 million, but it was actually the QR coding part of it that did work. And that's going to be tied to the next surveillance system coming through, which is the central bank digital currency. Keep your eyes open for that, people. Actually, I thought I'd do a search on Capital Research Management just to see who is on the board, because I know it's Buffett and that, but I wanted to see who else, because there are a lot of other people that sit on it. Of course, Norges Bank Investment Management is there. Also, JP Morgan Investment Management. Just seeing if there's other ones in there that I know. And actually, it's actually called the Capital Group of Companies. And I actually can't find it in Market Screener. It's actually really difficult to figure out who's part of it. I mean, they've got big players like Microsoft and all that all the way through. But I'm trying to nail Berkshire Hathaway because that's Warren Buffett. But I don't think I've got the connection. So over all these years, I may have had that wrong with Capital Group being involved with Buffett, but it seems like it's a very, they're not letting us see who they all are. So I'm assuming the top, you know, at least 100 will be amongst the Capital Group anyway, of the fund managers. And then you've got all the elitist shareholders involved in those fund managers and back and forward sitting on the same boards. So I'm just going to dig a little bit deeper and then let it go, because I don't really want to turn this podcast into what fund managers link to what globalist leaders. That's for another podcast. One sec. Okay, so I did a search and I found capitalgroup.com. I thought, well, that's, why didn't I not think of that? So I've gone to what they've called the individual investments, and it's a quarterly holdings. Now it's got 218 investors. And I thought, surely Warren Buffett's amongst them. And he is, but he isn't. He's on, page 151. So not a big deal, but he's there. But the top one, and I did think this was really interesting, was Microsoft. So this is Bill Gates, but every other globalist group is in there. So you can understand that they probably sit on the boards of all of the other ones. So basically, it's just a mismatch of the whole lot of them owning everything. Just a portion of this port, but they're not in competition really, people. This is what it used to look like. It used to look like, full on competition. No, they're working together for an agenda. Of course, there's people grabbing bags of gold and doing runners. That happens all the time. But the main players are still there. So if I go back to the actual beginning, Microsoft is at the top. Okay, they've got like 7% holdings in Capital Group. But they're all there, people. Even Capital Group has got 3.8% of its own. And General Electric are there. Amazon's there. MasterCard, Apple, Alphabet, you name them. They're all there. So this is what I'm saying. It's just, they're all just jumbled up on the next one. So you look at BlackRock, same thing. You look at all the other ones, same thing. Norges Bank, same thing. I will do an actual pulling apart of these, you know, maybe the top 20. And then you'll see that it's the same 200 in the top 20 all jumbled up. That's what it's going to appear to me to be like. And no surprises. And it's not just the West. There's a lot of Chinese multinationals in there as well as other ones. So you can see that there is something going on that isn't sort of this us and them. It's a bit of let's see what we can get. But in the end, they're all going to get together and they're going to say, look, honestly, we've made a lot of money. We've got a lot of power. We really don't need all these people anymore. This is really what the consensus is becoming. Okay, they're not all falling into lockstep, but at the same time, they're all starting to agree. And this is why they have those big meetings like the G20 and and they all get together in their secret, the other secret meetings, which is the Bilderbergers, and they close the doors. They don't want the public to hear it because they just want to have a chinwag amongst themselves. So we just have to guess what they're talking about. But you can honestly see that they've all made the money. It's not about the money anymore, the control, the power. They got all that. What it is now is like godlike powers to, you know, erase people from the planet. That's the next step. And, of course, the long-term effort to get longevity so they don't actually die. We die, but they don't. But we know that's really not what's going to happen. But they're trying, and we're trying to stop them. Now, to get back to that article I was talking about earlier, this is the Cash is King, sign the petition, and then it goes on to tell you about the 10 million customers who were affected by the Optus outage. That's abc.net.au, 9th of November 2023, just to pick up where I left off. It says, one hospitality business in New South Wales said, in an increasingly cashless society, it lost about 80% of customers as a result of the outage. 80% people, almost the whole business. And it's got, in Melbourne, cafe owner Johnny Sandish said despite the outage, he continued to serve customers, advising them they could only pay by cash. And it's he's saying people were eating and some of them went to the bank and never came back, he said. So promised the cash, didn't come back. It says if some are honest, they'll go to the bank and they'll get the money. But if not, we'll have to deal with the losses. He said, it's a very, very bad, very frustrating. We're losing a lot of money. That's the honesty in people these days, people. Mr. Sandy said Optus should foot the bill for the losses of small business, and he's not the only one who thinks so. But the problem with that, people, is they would have a clause in their contract saying if outage goes out, it's not their fault, because there's no way they're going to be liable for any of this. The problem is when there's less communication companies and everyone's on one or two or three of them, when they go out and have an outage, it's going to affect millions like it did. It's not all spread out like it used to be. As you can see, there are 10 million just Optus customers. And then he goes on to say they should give the money back that we are losing, Mr. Sandish said. It says Theo Rissus knows the challenges of running a hospitality business on an ordinary day, but Wednesday was far from that. He said, our music is gone. Our phones are gone. Anything that's on the Optus network, it's completely wiped us out, he said. His cafe in Melbourne CBD has just introduced a system where customers can order and pay online at their tables, which wasn't possible yesterday. See what happens when you go to Planet of the Apps? It fails, people. It says the morning rush didn't come when expected, and Mr. Rissus estimated losses in the thousands. See, you've got to have a backup. You know, I've told people about their digital license on their phone. You've got to have the physical one in your pocket, whether you like it or not. It's the same with the cards. If you've got a card on your phone, you better put a card in your pocket, you know, either or. Now, in the case of the FPOS machines, they were down as well because they're also part of the network. So you just got to have another backup plan, like another bank account or another communications company that you hooked up with. I mean, that's what I do, and most people should do that, and then this wouldn't happen. But unfortunately, this is a business they're talking about, and they're hooked up to a certain provider. The provider goes down, they go down. So there's a problem with the way things are these days. And it says, he goes on to say, the funny thing is, I just changed from Telstra. Went to Optus thinking that this wouldn't go down because Telstra was having problems. And now we've got the same thing again. So there you go. Perfect storm. Both of them are being hacked, whether it's on purpose or whether it's just unlucky. The fact is people rely on their livelihoods for this, and it's not being compensated. Simple as that. So it says, when asked what Optus should do, he said it needed to please explain or please compensate. Well, they're just going to give you a gobbledygook talk like, oh, it was the network, or what do they call it? The deep network failed. They'll just make up words, and then, unless you're a technician, you've got no chance of knowing what the gobbledygook means, you know? But basically, it might end up in the courts. If people die and businesses lose millions of dollars, it could end up in the courts. And then they will have to put a fail-safe in. So it says when asked, moving on, it says more than just an inconvenience. It says it was an inconvenience for Optus customer Leighton Clifford, who said he felt lost without his phone. My generation, we love our phones, and we didn't really know what to do, he said. I remember growing up without phones, people, was not a big deal. But the people these days, it's like their Linus blanket. They cannot do without it, which is absolutely ridiculous. Because in a blackout or an outage like this, they'll go mad. They'll just start running in circles or something. Who knows? But it says here, or he says, I'm a little bit disappointed. You pay all this money to be on a plan and you can't use it. Oh, boo-hoo. Get another plan, buddy. I mean, simple. Demand for the ride-sharing service Uber surged across Melbourne as train services ground to a halt. Consumers reported trip prices surging more than double the usual fares during the peak commute, because that's what they can do. They can do it, people. And some simply couldn't order an Uber or find another means of transport without phone service. Double whammy, people. One commuter told the ABC the outage left people stranded. Of course, they don't even have buses yet, so no one knows what they're doing, she said. It says Sanjita Lemanichan said, like many others, she couldn't get to work on time. She says, I have to get to work at 7 a.m, but it's already 6:30 and I'm taking an Uber. I won't get there on time, she said. It's too frustrating. A gym in Canberra had to scramble to put together impromptu classes and turned away a handful of clients after all their systems went down. This is a gym, the most physical place, and they can't do anything because the systems are down. Pretty funny, Vival. So it says, UVX Bell Connon manager Christopher Murphy said it had been panic stations for staff throughout the day as the gym relied on a constant feed of circuit-style workouts fed through Wi-Fi-connected TVs for its operations. So that's what happens when you streamline things, literally, people. He said, the event had put a lot of strain and extra staff had to be called in to try and manage the disruption by making up workouts and resorting to whiteboards with instructions. Well, that's how it used to be done, people. It says our operations were messed around. It does put a sour taste in people's mouths because there is this stress relief, Mr. Murphy said. Internet service is a needed service. We just want reliability. See, now I remember being in the music industry, and this is a classic indicator. And I remember this was around the time, I won't say where I was or who it was, but it was around the time when the typing pools were on the way out. These were like, it was a record company that was hooked up with this agency, and they had to let go all the people that were in the typing pool to be replaced by the new computer systems. Okay, so all the typers, all the clickety-clacks was gone. Suddenly it was quiet, and it was all very just quiet keyboards for the certain people that were doing it. But it was less staff, definitely less staff. And I remember accidentally doing a worksheet for a major Australian band, and the worksheet is like to let them know where they're playing and what time they're on, just all the usual details that managers want. And I remember one of Australia's biggest bands, I won't say who it is, worksheets were sent out to me with nothing on them. They were blank because obviously I'd had an error in what I was doing and it wasn't sent out, the information wasn't put onto the worksheets. But that's what used to happen back in those days. We're talking like the very early 90s, late 80s. And this is when technology was coming into the music business, but also another major incident. This is when the typing pool was gone and people were just trying to get by because it was a crossover period. I remember when I was working in, way back in the day, I used to work for the government. Oh, that's right, people, way in the early 80s. And I remember the section we were in were like installing new equipment, and we were part of like the office supply section. And I remember we installed the first computers into in 1984, this would have been the first computers into the government's building in the city. And this is when the first lot of computers were actually installed. But this is maybe 10 years later or less. The music industry was catching up. Everyone, it still happens today. There's still companies that are behind in technology. You can see it and all that. But everyone's starting to fuse together into this one great melting pot of this central control system. This is what they want. And it's been happening for a good 20 years now, but it's starting to catch up really quickly. Anyway, the boss back in the day, back in that time, said we had a blackout. This is going to happen now too, people. We had a blackout, and so everything went down. So we just sat around thinking, oh, well, there's nothing to do. We can't do anything. And then he just went, right, this is the same boss, very, very astute. He went into the where the old typewriters used to be. Now, I know you're starting to laugh. And he went into the cupboards and dragged them all out and blew the dust off them and said, they work. Because you didn't have to plug them in. They weren't even the electric ones. He said, start typing. So here we were. And this is what I'm saying. But that stuff worked. The mail system worked. But here we are now electronically on email, where all the apps on the phones. As soon as there's a blackout or a hack, you can't do anything. And you end up like these poor people did on that day where 10 million people were knocked out. So reading on, carrying on from where I left off. So the gym operator says, our operations were messed around. It does put a sour taste in people's mouths because this is their stress relief, Mr. Murphy said. It's got internet service, is needed service. We just want reliability. You're never going to get it. It's run with a power source that is actually negligent now. We're going to have less of it and more of this. So it says lives at risk during the outage. It says some mobile phones weren't able to get through to 000 and hospitals were impacted across the country, including virtual emergency departments in rural and remote areas. So that's your telehealth. Good old virtual, and it goes out, and then the patient's sitting there going, what do I do? And the doctor's not there. Dr. Ghost is gone. Doctor Who vanished, just like that. So it says Ramsay Healthcare, a private provider that services 73 hospitals across the country, said it experienced widespread disruptions to regional hospitals and health clinics. The Victorian Ambulance Union said the outage stopped emergency services from calling back patients. And it says in Tamworth, New South Wales, Danielle Hopewood had to access shopping centre Wi-Fi to get critical updates about her father's health. She says, I'm waiting for the phone calls from the John Hunter Hospital Cancer Unit, she said. It says, a Mildura snake catcher in Victoria's northwest said the outage left people in life-threatening situations after he missed 15 important call-outs and was put 2 hours behind schedule. 2 hours can put a lot of people's lives in danger, he said. And it's got, meanwhile, residents in the remote WA community of, looks like, Punmure were completely cut off the grid, serviced solely by Optus. So a whole off-the-grid community with one source of communications cut off, people, just like that. Luckily, a lot of these off-gridders can actually survive without all that. So it says, Punmure, P-U-M-N-U, however you want to pronounce it, Chief Executive Edith Costello said it caused some distress among community members. It's a community member's only form of communication to keep in touch with family, she said. It may seem a minor thing, but when it's 43 degrees heat and you know you've got family on the road, if they don't turn up or you don't know where they've left, it can cause problems. Victoria's Attorney General Jacqueline Sims said it was a concerning situation. This is more than just an inconvenience. This is a potential for putting lives at risk, she said. And it's got outages of this magnitude rare. Of course this is coming, people. You knew it. Optus CEO Kelly Bayer-Rosmarin said the cause was a technical network issue and a thorough root cause analysis would be conducted by the company before more information could be provided. Well, they're going to have to jump on that soon, people. She apologised to customers, saying the company's service had been restored. Andrew Williams, Australian Communications Consumer Action Network CEO, said outages of this magnitude were rare, but they had occurred in the past. This kind of outage really highlights the essentiality of communications. We pretty much live our lives on our phones and we need that connectivity, he said. It's a bit like electricity and water. You only realise how significant it is when you don't have access to it. I think water's a lot more important than electricity, people. What do you think? You could survive without electricity, but you cannot survive without water. So that was a bit ridiculous trying to compare the two together. So it says, Mr. Williams said customers should keep a record of losses incurred as a result of the outage in case of compensation. Well, I think businesses would do that anyway. But whether they're going to get compensation is another matter. Or they get 200 gigabytes of free data. That should help the thousands of dollars they've lost. It's ridiculous. It says, after the lessons that have been learned and all of it's been rectified, conversations with Optus about how to recompense their customers for any loss involved, he said. So keep a record and make sure it's quite quantifiable. No, they've already done it. I'll read the 200 gigabyte thing in a sec. It's just nonsensical. People have just been duped so bad. It says, telecommunications expert Professor Mark Gregory said the Optus national outage was unacceptable. I agree. In 2023, the idea that we could have a national outage in one of our major telcos is quite unthinkable, he said. Last year, a cyber hack exposed the data of millions of Optus customers with a class action against the company still winding through the courts. A year later, people. Now they have to go through it again. For Optus, this is the latest national outage. This latest national outage is really the nail in the coffin for their reputation, Mr. Gregory said. Telecommunications is part of our daily life, and Optus doesn't seem to get that. He wants the government to force telcos to have backup systems to stop this from happening again. But the problem is, you get a cyber hack, they know what they're doing, and it could be an inside job. So you've really got to be very careful about how you say you're going to definitely back it up. I'm telling you, people, one day, very soon, they'll have a central system, okay? And the central system will control all of it, and that'll be your backup. That's that's what's going to happen, a bit like the NBN. Remember when that came in, the National Broadband Network, and we thought, what's this new thing we have to attach to our modems now? Well, it's just another government spy thing, so they can get in there and, you know, watch your traffic. So here we go again. The telcos will probably have someone watching their traffic. Who knows? They do the same thing with Google. On one of the invisible floors of the Google building, you've got Prism. Have a look at that. Look that up, Prism. Actually, I'll go there now and check this out. This is a real thing that is happening in real time as I speak. Bear in mind, this story's from nearly 10 years ago. Okay, so it's got NSA Prism program taps into user data of Apple, Google, and others. And it's got top secret Prism program claims direct access to servers of firms including Google, Apple, and Facebook. Companies deny any knowledge of program in operation since 2007. It says the National Security Agency has obtained direct access to the systems of Google, Facebook, Apple, and other US internet giants, according to a top secret document obtained by The Guardian. So this is theguardian.com. I'll get the date so we can see roughly when it was. The 8th of June, 2013. And it says, the NSA access is part of a previously undisclosed program called PRISM, which allows officials to collect material, including search history, the content of emails, file transfers, and live chats, the document says. The Guardian has verified the authenticity of the document. A 41-slide PowerPoint presentation classified as top secret with no distribution to foreign allies, which was apparently used to train intelligence operatives on the capabilities of the program. The document claims collection directly from the servers of major US service providers. It says, although the presentation claims the program is run with the assistance of the companies, all those who responded to a Guardian request for comment on Thursday denied knowledge of any such program. In a statement, Google said, Google cares deeply about the security of our users' data. We disclose user data to government in accordance with the law, and we review all such requests carefully. From time to time, people allege that we have created the government backdoor into our systems, but Google does not have a backdoor for the government to access private user data. Several senior tech executives insisted that they had no knowledge of PRISM or any other similar scheme. They said they would never have been involved in such a program. If they are doing this, they are doing it without our knowledge, one said. An Apple spokesman said it had never heard of PRISM. The NSA access was enabled by changes to US surveillance law introduced under President Bush and renewed under Obama in December 2012. It says the program facilitates extensive in-depth surveillance on live communications and stored information. The law allows for the targeting of any customers of participating firms who live outside the US or those Americans whose communications include people outside the US. It also opens the possibility of communications made entirely within the US being collected without warrants. Disclosure of the PRISM program follows a leak to The Guardian on Wednesday of a top secret court order compelling telecoms providers Verizon to turn over telephone records of millions of US customers. The participation of the internet companies in PRISM will add to the debate. Ignited by the Verizon revelation about the scale of surveillance by the intelligence services. Unlike the collection of those call records, this surveillance can include the content of communications and not just the metadata. Some of the world's largest internet brands are claimed to be part of the information sharing program since its introduction in 2007. Microsoft, which is currently running an advertising campaign with the slogan, "Your privacy is our priority," was the first, with collection beginning in December 2007. It was followed by Yahoo in 2008, Google, Facebook and PalTalk in 2009, YouTube in 2010, Skype and AOL in 2011, and finally Apple, which joined the program in 2012. The program is continuing to expand and other providers due to come online. It's got collectively the companies cover the vast majority of online email, search, video and communications network. And it's got the extent and nature of the data collected from each company varies. Companies are legally obliged to comply with the request for users' communications under US law. But the PRISM program allows the intelligence services direct access to the company service. It says the NSA document notes the operations have assistance of communications providers in the US. The revelation also supports concerns raised by several US senators during the renewal of the FISA Amendments Act in December 2012, who warned about the scale of surveillance the law might enable and shortcomings in the safeguards it introduces. When the FAA was first enacted, defenders of the statute argued that a significant check on abuse would be the NSA's inability to obtain electronic communications without the consent of the telecom and internet companies that control the data. But the PRISM program renders that consent unnecessary, as it allows the agency to directly and unilaterally seize the communications of the company's servers. It says a chart prepared by the NSA contained within the top secret document obtained by The Guardian underscores the breadth of the data it is able to obtain. Email, video, voice chat, videos, photos, voice over IP, Skype for example, chats, file transfers, social networking details, and more. Now this program goes, this article goes on for a lot of people, so I'm not going to read the whole thing, but you can see that this is what they'll offer. If they keep having these problems with Telstra and Optus, this is what they're going to do. They're going to put it probably on the PRISM program and get an outsourced global or central database company to run those companies and make sure that it's fail-safe. That's what they'll do. And you know what? The people of Australia will go, thank God. Thank God there's someone that cares. And now to get up to date with the PRISM program in 2023, it is a real thing, people. I just went to Jimmy Wales' Wikipedia and stared me black and white in the face. It's got PRISM is a code name for the program in which the United States National Security Agency collects internet communications from various US internet companies. The program is also known by the name, looks like CGAD. And PRISM collects stored internet communications based on demands made to internet companies such as Google, Apple, and FISA Amendments Act of 2008 to turn over any data that matches court-approved search terms, among other things. The NSA can use these PRISM requests to target communications that were encrypted when they traveled across the internet backbone, to focus on stored data and telecommunications filtering systems discarded earlier, and to get data that is easier to handle. PRISM began in 2007 in the wake of the passage of the Protect America Act under the Bush administration. The program is operated under the supervision of the U.S. Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court, that's the FISA. It says its existence was leaked 6 years later by NSA contractor Edward Snowden. So that's how we found out about it, people, who warned that the extent of mass data collection was far greater than the public knew and included what he characterized as dangerous and criminal activities. The disclosures were published by The Guardian and The Washington Post on the June 6, 2013. So that's the one I just read. So it says, subsequent documents have demonstrated a financial arrangement between the NSA's Special Source Operations Division and PRISM partners in the millions of dollars. I'm not going to read any more. It exists. So if we want government overreach to get into the Optus-Telstra debate and all these communications, expect Australia's version of PRISM to be introduced, if it hasn't already. Now, here's a solution in the short term from Optus of what they would like to do for their customers after all the heartache. It says, Optus offers customers 200 gigabytes of free data as compensation for nationwide outage. That's November the 9th, 2023, abc.net.au. It says, Optus will provide eligible customers, and not all of them, with 200 gigabytes of extra data as compensation for the nationwide outage on Wednesday that impacted more than 10 million Australians and lasted for more than 12 hours. In a statement, Optus CEO Kelly Bayer Rosmarin, said the additional data was to acknowledge the patience and loyalty of their customers. We truly appreciate our customers' patience and understanding as we work to restore our operations yesterday. We know that there is nothing we can do to make up for yesterday, and what customers want most is our network to work all the time, which is our number one priority. But we also want to acknowledge their patience and loyalty by giving them additional data to help during the holidays when so many people consume more data with friends and families. Now, what about the businesses? Eligible customers, it says, will have until the end of the year to activate the additional data, which will be available from Monday, November the 13th. It says eligible prepaid customers will be able to access unlimited data on weekends until the end of the year, a spokesman for Optus said. Optus said affected customers will be able to see more details about the offer and how to redeem it on Monday, but it has not provided details about the eligibility criteria customers must meet in order to access the data. A spokesperson for the company said businesses who were uniquely impacted by the outage should contact the Optus Business Centre. And it says it is still not known what caused the outage, with Ms. Bayer Rosmarin blaming a technical network fault on Wednesday afternoon. Optus now says a network event was to blame for the triggering the cascading failure that shut down its services across the country. Our network is designed with multiple layers of fallback and redundancy, she told the ABC's PM program on Thursday afternoon. It's a complex network. At the heart of it is a modern, intelligent router network that was developed with the world's leading vendors. Fail. And despite this, the network event yesterday triggered a cascading failure that resulted in the shutdown of services to our customers. Well, maybe there should be a cascading failure amongst the head honchos in Optus. Maybe that's where the cascading failure should start, people. What do you think? So it says, Ms. Bayer Rosmarin said Optus was deeply sorry for the outage, which came just over a year after the company was hit with a cyber attack with the details of personal identity documents of more than 2 million Australians compromised. I think it was more than that. It says, we know that we let everybody down yesterday, and that's why we put in place this thank you for our customers, she said. We really want to give them something that they will value, that demonstrates how much we care and how sorry we are. Asked about whether the 200 gigabytes of data was a replacement for proper compensation of refunds, Ms. Bayer Rosmarin said that the Optus deemed it necessary to offer the data because of its high value. They're not going to do any compensation. She says, we tried to do something that was of much greater value than simply refunding people for one day of their service, she said. What she doesn't get, it was probably thousands of dollars that customers lost, businesses, and she's giving them 200 gigabytes of free data. So I don't know where that fits in, people, but obviously they're only going to look after the majority, which are not the business owners. So you can see where that was targeted. So it says, we didn't think that was enough. Towards the end of the interview, Ms. Bayer Rosmarin was asked whether she had been asked to step aside by board members from Optus's parent company, Singtel, who are currently in Australia, or if she had considered resigning. I think we're out of time. I'm so sorry, she told PM. I hope that was helpful. Did a runner like they all do. Miss Bayer Rosmarin's interview with the ABC went for less than 6 minutes. Talk about being ambushed and then doing a runner. But yeah, it just goes on to show all these businesses were saying in the last article how they're just disappointed. It doesn't do anything for them. All this compensation of data means nothing because they need cold hard cash, which is why they did the data, was to earn the money for their savings accounts and to run the company, not to provide more data just for them to go online and do the business they would have been doing in the first place if it hadn't gone down. Simple as that. You can't create new days out of no days. Anyway, and just to finish up with the Optus debacle, ABC.net.au came out on the 9th of November 2023. Experts say Optus coverage blackout could happen again in Australia. It says the telecommunications experts have warned Australia's largest mobile providers are vulnerable to another major outage due to the gradual cost-cutting and a critical lack of regulation. It says Optus is soon to be the subject of a government review, a Senate inquiry, and a probe by the Australian Communications and Media Authority after its network collapsed and stayed down for more than 9 hours. It went up to 12. 10 million customers were affected, which included major businesses and hospitals. Industry expert Mark Gregory told 7:30 the catastrophic outage was likely due to a single point of failure and a lack of backup systems that could have prevented the extended length of the outage. He says, I think we can already conclude that the Optus network is not fit for purpose, Mr. Gregory said, adding that unless the systems are improved, the network remains vulnerable to more outages. And they are, people. You wait till the blackouts hit. It says, we don't have the reliability and redundancies that many of us would expect our technology companies to have. We know it was more than a human error or infrastructure error. What we know is that it's a decision made by the company in the way that their network is designed and built. Mr. Gregory said Optus and Telstra have likely concluded that building highly advanced safeguards to their infrastructure and software is too expensive, and they have been allowed by the government to prioritise profit over the reliability of the service. The telcos, like all technology companies, want to minimise their engineering spend. They're trying to maximise profit and they're trading off the possibility there will be outages or failures in their efforts to make a larger profit, he said. Optus has been operating as a second telecommunications carrier since 1991, 6 years before Telstra began privatisation. Telecommunications expert Paul Budd said he anticipated issues would arise when Australia's carriers moved to a more deregulated environment. It says it all goes back to when Telstra was privatised back in the 1990s. At that point in time, people, he says like himself, argued that now was the time to come up with good regulations, he said. It's not just another company like a chocolate factory. No, this is an integral to our society, to our economy, and that was not recognised when Telstra was privatised, and that situation has continued until now. Mr. Budd is also concerned by the lack of redundancies in both Telstra and Optus's systems. We cannot have a single point of failure. It's just unacceptable, he said. We had a problem with Telstra in May this year. We had a big hack with Optus last September. And as I've mentioned, we've had similar sort of outages that lasted half a day. And sometimes we see it in regions. It sometimes takes days for companies to fix the outages. And this says, investigating the cause. A spokesman for Telstra said the company is constantly investing in upgrading its network. We're continually taking proactive steps to manage our network resilience with our teams around the country working at it every day, they said. And it says we are committed to investing more to improve the coverage, capacity and the resiliency of our networks. Optus did not respond to questions sent by 7:30, but said on Wednesday it was investigating the specific cause of the nationwide outage. And it says the Optus network is designed with multiple layers of fallback and redundancy. It said, well, it didn't work, did it? It says at the heart of this is a modern intelligent router network developed with the world's leading vendors. Despite this, a network event yesterday triggered a cascading failure, which resulted in the shutdown of services to our customers. So it doesn't matter what the words say, people. It's actually the results of the problem. And I think 10 million people would agree that it's not good enough, is it? Now, I wanted to jump onto a completely different subject from what I've been talking about for the last hour. This is going to affect just about everyone in the world when it kicks in. Not talking about pandemics, not talking about anything to do with wars. I'm actually talking about the working week. There's a lot of talk at the moment about, oh, I want to work less hours. You know, I want to do a 4-day week. I don't want to work 5 days anymore. Because when you think about it, when the working week started, it wasn't really a week. It was you worked all day, every day. That's what it used to be. There were no days off. The only time there was a day off was when you had a religious day to pray. And that was to do with, the Christian religion. They would have, it used to be the Sabbath was on the Saturday from memory, and it moved to the Sunday. But that was a day of rest where, you know, on the seventh day I rested and all that and didn't build the world anymore and all that sort of stuff. Stuff that's in the Bible and that. It's all over the place. It seems to have been just something in human history where you had this time out. You always had to have this time out from a routine. And what we've become, the modern world, is a 5-day working week with 2 days off, Saturday, Sunday. But as you can see, over many, many decades, it has absolutely changed. It has morphed back into working all the time. And so people are burning out. COVID did stop the world. I mean, it was a bad thing, but the only good thing about it is it stopped people and got them to think, because they're all on the hamster wheel. And as soon as that came along, they actually had a chance to think. And then they started to work things out and go, hang on, I don't think I like what's happening. And that's the one mistake the globalists made. They got their surveillance devices through, and they got people all hooked up on the hamster wheel in a different way, like working from home and all that, where people thought they had more freedom. You think about it, you actually have less freedom. I mean, you've got a phone that's on 24/7. You are contactable from your job, in some people's cases, 24/7. If you work from home, your work is now in your home. And a lot of people go, oh, yeah, but I can go to work in my pajamas. I can do this. Okay. That doesn't matter. They have access to you just about 24/7 anywhere. This is not good. I mean, it's not all happening yet. People can still, you know, turn off. But really, that's what's happened. Your workplace or the corporate world, the government have come into your home, your private space. Used to be private. A lot of people don't have privacy now. They don't even close their curtains anymore. They just leave themselves open like a big episode of Big Brother, where they just want you to watch what they do all day. It's mundane, boring. But still, that's what we've become. We've become sort of this voyeuristic entity of the future, where we just sort of, we expect to be able to see straight through walls and things. This is what's happening. And so the government and the corporations and the elitists expect to do the same with you in mind. Now, if you can remember the movie and the book 1984, you remember when Winston Smith is asleep, character in the book, and suddenly he's woken up by his screen. Now, you've got to remember that when that book was written by, they say George Orwell, but it was actually Eric Blair. That's the real name. And he actually wrote it in 1948. It was released around that time. And they reversed it to 1984. So you can see the irony in that. But this guy envisaged stuff that was not around, wasn't even thought about. So he had this gigantic screen. Remember 1948, and you know, you would have thought about it before that, in the 40s, just after World War II. And he imagined a big screen that could talk to you and tell you to get out of bed, Winston, which it did, and do your exercises. What do you think we have today, people? We have exactly that. We're only 1 inch away from them jumping into your room and telling you to get up and get out of bed and go to work. And your work might just be in the lounge room, but they're watching. Because the phones and the cameras have allowed the whole world to become transparent. So now people think, well, if I get a four-day week, it's better for my health. What I know is going to happen, people. They will give you your four-day week. It's already happening. I'll name some companies that are doing it now. But the big problem with it is that they're going to get some people to do their 40-hour week in 4 days. So they'll be working 10 hours a day. Now, some people go, oh, it's not a big deal at my job. But it may affect people. Now, it's going to give that extra day off from that employee for someone else to take that spot. So you can see what's going to happen. Everyone, say 5 people take 4 days a week, that leaves 5 days. Or, you know, 4 people. Let's just get it in perspective. 4 people say, I want the 4-day working week. They get it. That leaves another opportunity for the other day that they've had off to make 5 days or 4 days, as I just said, for someone else to get a job. And then suddenly it's a really good thing because more people can get the jobs. But that's not what's going to happen in the long run. Because if jobs collapse, they're not going to pay you anymore. They're going to pay you less. And you'll be working longer hours to get less money. That's what's going to happen. And I can see it happening. But what they really want to do, and this is what's going to happen in the short term, when you've got a mass of people, like in Australia, we're about to have, I don't know, 500,000 to 600,000 people are coming into Australia to get jobs. They've been allowed in by the Prime Minister, you know, come in from all around. It's even, I mean, with the global hoax at the moment, with the climate hoax, they're saying that islands are sinking, so those people from those islands can come to Australia because their island's going to sink and they'll have nowhere to live. So they might as well come to Australia because, you know, we're the ones causing climate change. We're the biggest polluters on the planet, apparently, per capita. It's just unbelievable, the stuff that people believe. But anyway, what that's going to cause is mass migrations of people watering down the middle class because they're not going to have as much jobs, much hours and days to work. So the individual's going to have less and less. You'll have more individuals all over the place, but less and less until it's just a mass of third world people just, you know, clamoring to get some sort of normality out of life. I mean, it's really going to happen. They are going to try, the WEF, the New World Order, whatever you want to call them, the World Bank, IMF, all of those rolled into one, they're going to try and get people that have been in their homes all their lives and get them out of those homes. Price them out of them and then turn them into rental properties. I'm talking about people that own their homes. They're going to try and turf them out, people. And they're going to say, all these people with jobs now from India and China all around the world, they need somewhere to live. And they're going to make these, they're going to build them as well, but they will be gigantic, you know, like what we have in Australia with the quarantine centres. They'll be like that. Because that was what COVID was all about. It was to trial a new world order, like a world order. How can we do this? Well, let's QR code them. We'll get all the sheep into the pens, which are these rental properties, and we'll be able to monitor them from birth to death. And they'll do exactly as they're told because they will own nothing and they'll be happy, apparently. So that's what they really want to do. If they take everything off you, including your working hours, and just give you minimal days where you just survive, well, they've got you. How are you going to do it? You're going to grow your own food? They're banning that everywhere. They don't want you to do anything like that. No, they don't want you to sustain yourself or your neighbours or friends. No, they want to make sure you're on your knees to the duopoly of these food places, which will eventually, you won't be allowed through the door because there'll be social credit systems where they'll be able to monitor you in real time as you walk through it won't even be a turnstile anymore. It'll be just like a barrier. Like in, you know, like when you go through the airports for the reading when they do the scan, it'll be like that. You'll walk through that and it'll read you straight away, and they won't even have people serving you. There'll just be security guards, or there'll be locked doors, or something like that. And then your card or whatever you carry, whatever's going to be the device or the thing that's going to allow you to buy things that they can read, that's what they'll do. And if there's a malfunction or you don't have enough credits in your system, you won't be allowed to eat. it'll say, I'm sorry, sir, but we can't give you anything. And every time you go to get something behind the glass door, because most of all the food will be behind glass doors, you're not going to be able to access it. You know, and crime will be rampant. So the police forces will be double armed as they are now. It's a bleak future, and they really do want to try and do this. I mean, I don't know how they're going to do it. I don't know how they're going to get Australians out of their cars, let alone, you know, the internal combustion engine, because the Australians love their cars. And I don't know how they're going to crowbar them out of that into an electric car. You know, I already saw ads for BMW where they're, you know, touting the new electric BMW car. And I just laugh because it hasn't got a BMW motor in it. So it's just a shell with a giant 10,000 battery with the BMW logo stuck on the front of it. That's it. It's just ludicrous. And Porsche are going to do the same. Ferrari, all of them. Lamborghini's ridiculous. That's what these things were made for. It was the engines that drove them. It wasn't the, you know, the look of them is there, but that's what they're going to sell it on. Nothing else. I mean, these things are quiet. They don't make any noise, and they're a giant battery that just lasts for 10 years, and you've got to get another one. So, I mean, that's what, it's like a giant toy. You know, you got the robot cars when you were a kid, and you had a little controller, and it was wild. That's what it is. Nothing more than that. It's just a big, giant version of it, which can actually be controlled remotely. So that's another crazy thing for the future to look out for. You know, the automated future that we're heading towards. It's, I hope I'm not part of it. I don't want to see this in my lifetime, you know. I'd rather not know it happened, you know, rather than be at the beginning of this supposed utopia. It's not for us. They'll just keep you hoodwinked until the last minute. Then the great silver hammer will come out and just start popping people off. I think that'll just be euthanasia myself. I think people will voluntarily kill themselves to save the planet. There'll be lots of ways they're going to do it. It won't be at gunpoint. I just don't think. I think people will be so hoodwinked that they'll just, you know, go off to assisted dying. And, of course, it'll be the kids of the family getting the parents to assist to die. It's just murder. That's all it is. And take your stuff. It's just nuts. But that's what we've become. We don't have the social connection as much as we did. The technologies have torn us apart and created a wedge. And people don't know who to turn to anymore. You know, if they even know how to communicate anymore in real time in front of someone, that's going to be a challenge for the future as well. All right, so I'll get into this first story. I thought this is extremely interesting stuff. I mean, I did mention last week that I'd probably try and get into this story, so that's what I'm going to try and do. So it says, and this is an American version, so I'm going to do that, and then I'll get into the Australian version. Because you need to know how this is happening in lockstep with the rest of the world as well. So this story came out on November the 3rd, 2023, and it came out on CNBC.com. CNBC.com. It says over 75% of US workers say they could complete the same amount of work in 4 days rather than five. Now, already that headline is nonsensical. Would you, if you were a business owner, be absolutely furious if you knew that your workers could do what you're paying them for 5 days in 4 days? I mean, you'd be telling them now, you can do that now, and on that fifth day, you can work just as hard on that day too. We'll give you something else to do. But this is, anyway, let me read the story before you come back and try and read between the lines. It says, as younger generations, particularly Gen Z and millennials, are aging to make up more of the workforce, workplace expectations from employees are shifting. One such shift is the increase in demand for a four-day work week. Among US workers, over 75% say they could complete their current workload, in a four-day work week rather than five, according to a recent report from Fiverr. Millennials, who make up 35% of today's workforce, and that's a good point, were most passionate about the four-day work week, with 87% agreeing. Now, who's going to not agree to that? Yeah, the old 9-to-5, 5 days a week. Of course they're going to agree with it. Retail sometimes is working 7 days a week on Sundays, you know, the day of rest. Well, there's no day of rest for some people. So that's changed. Religion's been given us, it's been sidelined. So that's why the new rules are coming through, and they're not really new. This is what we used to do when the kids worked in the mines for 14-hour days. Everyone's forgotten about that, but that was a long time ago. I mean, part of the actual workday week changing, the hours, I should say, actually originated in parts of the UK and Europe, but actually in Australia as well, in particular in Tasmania. The stonemasons there went on strike. This was back in the olden days, way before modern Australia, and they protested that their days were too long. You know, the long 12, 14-hour days, too long. So they got it bumped down to about 10 hours, and they thought that was brilliant. They were on the move. Eventually, it was knocked down to 8 hours work, 8 hours recreation, and 8 hours sleep. And that's what we've been doing. It wasn't always like that, people. It's really a modern thing that's happening with that. So what's happening now is it's been slowly eroded away through, you know, education, and just the flexibility of technology has done this as well. It's not just happening in progress. It's been forced into it through technology, and COVID did it as well. It just about put the nail in the coffin, the digital nail. And people now have a different perspective on what they want the rest of their lives to be like. And believe me, a lot of these, they say millennials, they will not stay at jobs. They want the jobs to work for them. So it's all changed. It's gone the other way. Trouble is, if business all collapses, they can scream and holler all they like on the type of job they're going to get, but they're going to end up with no job. And that's the reality I think is coming just around the corner. And people have been massively hoodwinked. Anyway, let's read on and see what comes of this. It says, Fiverr is an online job marketplace for freelancers, conducted the survey of over 1,000 global workers in August, outlining changes and generational divides in workplace trends. It says the survey also showed that while overall younger generations of workers are demanding more flexibility in their work schedules, they prefer in-person interactions over remote work. Now, there's another good point to this too, people. Remember, as the gender thing changed, where women went to work and are now earning, or still not, but getting close to the male pay, it's now changing. It's not the husband and the wife that stayed at home to look after the kids as they got older, on school and all that. That whole model has gone. If anything's been eroded, it's that. So the working couple, because that's what they really are, now demand flexibility so they can have families and do what the older generations used to do when the wife stayed at home. That's what's changed. They want some of that space. So that's what's happening here. Reading on. It says, but current workplace trends don't necessarily reflect those values, or these values. It says, the consulting firm EY's annual workplace index found that although the four-day work week has gained popularity abroad, it has seen little adoption by US companies until recently. It says there is a gap between what employers are saying and what employers are doing. Michael Miller Levy, Senior Director of Market Research and Customer Insights at Fiverr, told CNBC. And it says workplace values are shifting. Of course they are. The average US worker reports that they are productive for 31 hours a week, which roughly equals 4 days of 9-to-5 work. With Generation Z workers, this number goes even lower, to 29 hours a week. It says Miller Levy says it's not because workers are being lazy, but instead due to a value shift in the workplace. I like that. Lazy equals value shift, people. Workers increasingly want to be assessed and evaluated not by the number of hours they work per week or the time that they spend in the office, but rather by the product and business outcomes they produce, she says. Now, that's well and good in some circumstances, but an hourly rate is because some jobs are monotonous and the hourly rate suits that. In other words, a job might take a certain time to do it. You can't do it quicker. Okay, like process work or something like that. You could speed it up, I suppose, but it's still an hourly rate. If you're going to get people to do productivity, you can't actually judge it. In other words, you could speed the process up till they near collapse, and people are going to say, well, that's not plausible. So in other words, they're always going to do something that's a repetitive thing on an hourly rate simply because they can actually equal the time. It's, in other words, if something's moving at a certain pace, to speed it up doesn't mean you're going to get the job done any better. So you've got to be very careful. Some things take time. So they're always going to keep like an hourly rate. Now, when you've got like people that do subcontracting, and this is probably where the idea came from, they can do that. They can say, okay, well, give this is how much the job's worth. And then you say, well, can you do it over this period of time? And that's how, and they could probably end it quicker if they can work faster in certain circumstances. That's possible. That makes sense. But the average worker, we're talking about, you know, this is like a minority of workers that can do this flexibility. The rest of them are doing mundane, sort of repetitive, predictable work. And, you know, unless they're thinking of automating all that or wiping it off the board, you're going to always need those sort of people to do that. You know, some things do take time. Not much you can do about it. Speeding it up doesn't mean the process is going to be any more accurate. It could create more problems. So I think pretty much businesses know the expectation of time when they do a job. I don't think it's speeding it up to 4 days a week is going to change what they used to do before. They're saying it does. Well, that could be, what was it called again? It was called, no, it wasn't called lazy. No, they're not being lazy, people. They're being, I've got to find that word again. It says, I've lost it. I've lost where I was in it, but you know what I'm saying. I think it's here. It says, US workers say, it's not because workers are being lazy, but instead due to a value shift. There it is. So when people go, oh, not very, I don't feel like completing that, I think I might do a value shift in that estimate of that work and might have a little lie down and call that a value shift lie down. I don't know where they get these words from. It's pretty funny. And reading on, it says, in a recent interview with Make It's obviously some sort of, I think it's on CNBC, historian Ben Honeycutt called the 40-hour week an historical accident and said that our current work week schedule is not an economic need anymore, but it's become a cultural value. It's probably true. I do agree with that. But still, let's read on. Although a five-day work week is still seemingly entrenched in our cultural understanding of work life, workers are increasingly growing out of it. According to a recent Monster survey, there's another one, one in three workers would quit their current job for a four-day work week job, with 10% saying they would even be okay facing a pay cut for it. Now, that's really important. This is what I'm worried about. You get these people that say, oh, I'll do a four-day working week, but I want the same money, and I'll put the same productivity of 5 days. And you go, oh, okay, it sounds a bit rough. But there are people willing to actually lose a day in the week and still be classified as permanent employees, not as casuals. And that's the four-day working week. So this is what they're going for. But they're saying they'll take a pay cut, which means they're going to lose a day's pay off their week. Now, I just saw on the news over the last few days that the rental market has now outgrown the cost of what people are earning that rent properties. In other words, it's becoming 30% of their wage is going to dead money for renting a roof over their head. It's very dangerous, people. It's actually going to keep growing as well, because there's no cap on the rents. These people can just go crazy and charge you ridiculous rents that will just put people on the street and all these empty rental properties, which won't stay empty for long, because there's lots of migrants from overseas that will come in, multitudes, and they'll move into those properties. That's what's going to happen. Anyway, so reading on, it says, and they don't want a four-day week. Oh, no, they want a 8-day week. You know, they want to work 8 days a week. So because they want more money. They don't want less money for more time. They want more time that equals more money. You see, so that's the hourly rate thing. Anyway, it says a similar valuation is seen in the case of work flexibility. It says over 2 in 5 American workers report feeling the most productive outside of regular 9-to-5 work hours. A recent Flex Jobs, here's another one, survey also found that 21% of workers cited inflexible work hours as the main reason they wanted to quit their jobs. Now, there's another thing happening here, myself included. I've always had two jobs. Okay, I've played in the music business, was it like a job, and you did your live, your day gig. Okay, you just did it. I mean, if you get super famous, you don't do the day gig anymore. Didn't happen. But I still do have two jobs. I still do it. As I said, in the pandemic, as soon as I got knocked out of one job, I could go back to teaching online. I could continue doing that. It didn't stop. The pandemic didn't stop it. It kept going. So it is good to spread the work around like that just in case. Okay. So it's not a bad idea to have two jobs, but they're not full time. So maybe in the future, they'll give us a 4-day week and you can have a one day job somewhere else. I mean, this is a very strong possibility, but it does change workplaces and employers don't really like that. It's very hard for managers to manage that sort of thing, but it looks like that's what might be coming. So anyway, it says, Miller Levy says the generational trends in answers are striking. It says flexibility in hours is valued most by Gen Z workers, with almost a third of them saying they feel more creative and inspired either early in the morning or late in the evening. it's already getting value shift is already starting, people. It says the overall desire for flexibility plays into how people decide between remote and in-person work as well. See, that's what I'm talking about, working from home. It says a large majority of respondents, 76%, who said that their current work arrangement did not meet their ideal preferences, said it was because they were required to be in the office more than they preferred. I mean, this is the big shift, people. This is your value shift. Although Gen X values flexibility, they are not as fond of working from home as other generations. Baby boomers preferred remote work with 40%, followed by Gen X 32% and millennials 29%. That's all pretty relative. I think everyone likes working from home. I think we could all agree that that's something people like doing. Generation Z workers like meeting people and interacting in person, but it doesn't necessarily have to be in the office. Miller Levy says, almost a third prefer working in public places like coffee shops. This is already getting silly, people, where they can meet and interact with people while keeping their flexibility. Oh, this is just getting funny. It's people just don't want to work at all, people. And it's, I think that's the end of the article, actually, just flicking through it. Yeah, it is. But that's, now we're getting into what's happening in Australia. So I didn't want to go through the American companies that are doing, because it's not really reflective on why I do the podcast, which is for Australians to get their perspective out there. So the idea is to see, let the world know what's happening in Australia. I'll get the next story up. One sec. Okay, so this is on news.com.au, and it came out on the 23rd of October, 2023. It says, the Australian companies with 4-day work weeks. It's got experts believe that the 4-day week may become the norm in Australia, and it says, here's where you can already enjoy it. So it says, some experts have suggested a 4-day work week. Oh, there we go. I'm reading the same thing again. May become the norm in Australia, the new norm of working. And here we go. It's called the 180 to 100 model. Allows employees to keep 100% of their pay while working 80% of the hours, as long as they maintain 100% of their productivity. Now, you know, maybe they're looking at office work and you can do this, but in a factory or warehouses where they're on a time schedule where certain things are processed, like a process worker, they can't really push the button and speed it up. There's only a certain speed you can go at before you make multiple mistakes. And of course, they're not completely automated yet. Human beings are still needed just yet, people. So this is not really applying to a lot of those people. Maybe if they get to the 4-day week, but productivity-wise, I'm not really sure if they can speed that up. I mean, if you know what I mean, some people out there will know what I'm talking about. Anyway, so reading on, it says, trials of the initiative in countries such as Iceland and the UK have been labelled after a sounding success, with reported benefits including reduced employee burnout, increased productivity, and greater talent attraction in a tight labour market. And it says, and the 180-100 isn't the only model. Oh, no, people. Other organisations allow staff to work shorter weeks for a pay cut. Oh, that's just great. Or offer standard 40-hour weeks condensed over 4 days. 10-hour days, people. It says just over one-third of Australian companies expect to transition to a four-day week within the next 5 years, people. This is Agenda 21/30. It's coming, people. They want to get this done to make sure people have all got their pay cuts, working less hours, more people all with jobs, but with less chance of success and very controllable. It's a bit like working for the dole. They'll probably get it that low. You'll be thinking, hang on, a bit late. So it says, here are some of the Aussie organisations that already offer a four-day week in some form. So let's go through the list, people. Medibank. This is one that got hacked recently too. I wonder if that's why they culled some of their workforce. Just this week, private health insurer Medibank announced it will offer a six-month trial of the four-day work week to 250 of its employees. It says the insurer's trial was designed by Four Day Week Global. Actually, I'm going to look them up. A leader in the movement, it says, and will be monitored by Macquarie University's Health and Wellbeing Research Unit. Let's have a look at who put together the Four Day Week Global. I mean, there's a key word in there, isn't there, people? Global. Let's see if we can find out who they are. I've got this sneaking suspicion, people. Just see who owns them first. So let's go to the wiki if we can find one of them. Because I really have no idea who they are. I've just read it now, just as I'm reading it out. But it looks like it's pretty much out there. But I'm just going to see if it's... No, it doesn't seem to have a week. Here we go. I've got... No, it's the four-day work week. So this company, whatever it is, just has a LinkedIn. I'll see if I can jump into LinkedIn. It might show something, but I don't think that's got it either. It looks like it's unless it's a New Zealand company, because it says New Zealand. So I'm just going to okay, it is. It's a New Zealand company. So I'm just going to jump in and see who they are first and see if they're getting funded by somebody, because these are the sort of businesses that will get a lot of cash influx to get this idea out there as quick as they can. Anyway, so let's see if we can find out more about them. That's what I'm going to look for, the about. And then we'll sort of jump in and see who might be funding them. Okay, so they're featured in Time Magazine, Fortune, Forbes, Bloomberg, BBC, New York Times, The Guardian, CNN. So they've got their name out there. Let's see about them. So I'm going to go to the about and just see where they came from. And it says, welcome to 4 Day Week Global, the world's leading organization with a goal to change the future of work through working smarter, not longer. And it's got founded in 2019. So this is really new. This would have been thought up during the pandemic, people, by Andrew Barnes. We'll look him up. And Charlotte Lockhart. 4 Day Week Global seeks to reshape the way we think about work by moving the conversation away from hours and into productivity and output. So let's have a look. Now we've got some names. We'll see if we can... And it says down the bottom here, in 2023, it said we had the privilege of being featured in Time's 100 Most Influential Companies list alongside global giants such as Apple, Disney and Microsoft. Ooh, that's a big gold star on the forehead. So let's look up this Andrew Barnes. See if we can figure out who he is. It says entrepreneurs. This guy's got dollars in his pocket. Andrew Barnes has made a career of market-changing innovation and industry digitization, leading and transforming companies in the United Kingdom, Australia, and New Zealand. It says in 2018, he made international headlines across the world with an idea that he believed would raise productivity in the workplace while also contributing to the personal well-being of his staff, a four-day work week. So I'm not going to see, I don't know if there's anything more, because this is on their website, so it's patting themselves on the back. So let's see if we can find out who this guy is and see if there's any funding. Actually, I'll go back to the company and see if they're being funded by anyone. But I'll just grab this guy first. There might be something interesting. He actually might have a Wikipedia. It's possible. He should have one now if he's got a global company that everyone's jumping to sign up to, but it doesn't look like he's got... No, he hasn't got a wiki, but that's interesting. I thought that he would, so that's just interesting that he doesn't. So actually, what I will do, sometimes Wikipedia doesn't want you to find... Oh, here, I found it. It's all right. It was near the top. I just missed it. Okay, so it's here. Let's go through this. This guy that can brainstorm a whole new idea from nowhere. It says, so he's born in England. So that's an English guy. And it says, let's see where he went. He went to the University of Cambridge, Harvard Business School. So, oh, he's an associate of the Chartered Institute of Bankers in the UK. So let's see if he got a helping hand. He spent 20 years in Australia, holding senior roles in companies including Macquarie Bank. Okay, so he's amongst it. Now let's see if he got funding, because that would have been interesting. Aha, I knew it, people. It didn't take long to find it either. It says in 2018, Barnes announced the Perpetual Guardian would be training 4-day weeks with staff receiving an extra day off work on full pay each week. Staff were not required to work additional hours on their 4 working days. In late March 2018, Barnes said that the trial was going well, with staff reporting more time with family, hobbies, ploughing through the to-do lists and home maintenance. After the end of the trial, 78% of the employees stated they were able to successfully manage their work-life balance, compared to 54% in November 2017. Employees' stress levels decreased by 7%. It says the trial sparked widespread international interest, along with commentary from workers' unions, other businesses and counsellors. Now, this is the big one, people. It also generated interest from the World Economic Forum, you know, the one that you'll own nothing and be happy, which noted the success of the trial on its weforum.org site. So there you go. Straight away, eyebrows went up with Klaus Schwab, you know, because he's looking at this. They want to make sure that you do a 4-day week, but you get a cut pay. Then they can start reducing everyone's pay, but the cost of living will still be going through the roof, pool. Interest rates will still be going up. That's not going to change, but you'll end up selling your house just to keep the idea that things must be getting better because you're working less. It's just the whole thing's ridiculous, isn't it? I mean, now it does go on and on. This is quite a big... Now, here we go. I just want to see if he's getting funding. That's all I'm trying to figure out here. It says... Barnes is a strong advocate for philanthropy. As the leader of Perpetual Guardian, he established the Perpetual Guardian Foundation, which aims to make donating easy for everyone, enabling donations as little as $5 to be pooled into educating children, supporting the arts, protecting the environment. Oh, it's got to protect the environment all the time. But it's not saying anything else. It's just... He just goes on about this Perpetual Guardian. I'm wondering if people fund into that might be outsiders that can just sort of prop it up a bit. Because I'm not really saying anything in here. I can't really see anything in here that's saying, apart from that WF thing that's mentioned, there's nothing much else that's mentioned, I should say. It's quite a big wiki. I don't want to read all the way through it, but I'm just looking. It says the trial and subsequent adoption of the 4-day work week proved a topic of interest on social media, prompting plenty of discussions across Facebook and LinkedIn, and garnering mention in LinkedIn's US Daily Rundown. And then it just goes on about all the people that are trying to give this thing a run. And it's got the Bank of England's chief economist predicted that the 4-day week would replace the standard 5-day week for most workers around 2050, a view endorsed by a survey of British workers. So this is coming, but I can't see anything where he's getting a boost unless it's through that Perpetual Guardian. And I'm just reading here. Oh, hang on, there's something here. In 2013, Barnes acquired Perpetual Trust in New Zealand. And a year later, he founded and purchased the Guardian Trust, creating Perpetual Guardian. So that's actually looks like a trust company. In April 2015, Barnes, as managing director, acquired an e-will platform for My Bucket List, and in August added Foundation Corporate Trust to his list of acquisitions. In 2020, when the COVID-19 pandemic saw New Zealand in lockdown, Barnes pushed for law changes to make digital signatures on wills legal. It has been suggested he could be one of New Zealand's next blue chip politicians. So there you go, people. He's right amongst it. He's been a banker. He knows all the people in the industries, but it's not saying anything about money under the table. So I'm going to look up Perpetual Guardian. I just want to see. Could be his offsider that's got all the bucks, so I might have to look at her as well. But I just want to see if there's something in here with donating and who might have donated to it, because that's really going to break it open. I don't think there's a wiki on them. I'm looking at it now, and it's, I suppose it's included in the other wiki that I was just reading, but I don't see anything in here. So I might be going down a bit of a dead end, but still you can see this is being pushed by the big guns, WEF, all the banks. They want to see this thing go through. So there's obviously, you know, they want to, yeah, it's not in there. They want to really push this. So I'm going to have a look at her and see if there's something to her that shows where the money's coming from. So it's got a link to her on their site, Charlotte Lockhart, co-founder of the four-day week Global. Charlotte works promoting internationally the benefits of a productivity-focused and reduced-hour workplace. And it says she's on the board of Wellbeing Research Centre at Oxford University. Charlotte's passion for the reduced-hour work has led four-day week Global to become the world's leading organisation in promoting the concept of working smarter, not longer. And it's got her role. She is a co-founding member of the World Wellbeing Movement. So there's another one, people, that's obviously jumped on with this one. So maybe that's where the funding is coming through. I'm not sure. But this is all brand spanking new. This hasn't been around that long, people, and it's already shot to the top. So you can see that something's pushing this from behind. So I'm just going to click on this World Wellbeing Movement, and then I might do a search on her. So it's just loading. And it's got, it's obviously, it's got pop-ups already. Great. So I'm just going to see who they are and see if they actually say it. Doesn't look like they have. Who is it? Who's running it? It's just, it's an open sort of website saying how great they are and how they can change your life. But yeah, it doesn't have anything on this website. I'm just seeing if they're sponsors. Oh, here we go. Founding and premium members. So they've got the HSBC UK. So there's your big banks. There's other ones in here. I'm not going to read them all out. I'll just read out the ones that I think would BT are on there. And I think BT are in problems. I don't know about them. S&P Global. You got there's just a few more. I'll just see if there's some big ones in there. Unilever's in there. Cisco. University of Oxford, McKinsey Health Institute, some big guns in there, people. And I'll just, this is the last page. What have we got? Victor Pinchart Foundation. Now, I don't know who a lot of these ones are, but still, they've got support. And I don't see anything else. It may not be the smoking gun, but it's going to get pushed because they can use these people to force this idea onto people through companies and then cut their wages. They may increase their work hours and cut their wages. That's what could happen. So if you're working a 40-hour week in 4 days, that's a 10-hour day. So all they have to do is reduce your pay and then add another day to that, another 10-hour day, and you'd be working 50 hours a week for less money. That could happen in the future in certain jobs. But in the general workforce, you may be down to 3 days of work, working 10 hours or 11-hour days. And then there's another person doing the other 3 days and on, just filling it all up. So more people with more jobs, working more hours, but obviously for less money. That's what's going to happen. That's how they're going to do it. That's how they're going to plateau all of the first world and force them all down into the third world and make them sell their houses, turn them into rentals, and you will own nothing, people. And apparently, you'll be very happy. So after that rabbit hole didn't really go anywhere. We still got to keep our eye on it because you don't know where money will be injected and will be acquired by a globalist organisation that will then take the reins. That's what they always do. So it's something to keep an eye on is these 4 day week companies that keep pushing it to the market. So it says Medibank's experiment is based on the 10-80-100 model, offering 100% of employees' salaries while asking them to work 80% of their former hours. And it says there are lots of pressures out there right now, whether it's costs of living or people managing their work and home commitments. Medibank People, Spaces and Sustainability Group leader Kylie Bishop said. It says we're constantly thinking about how we can help balance that for our people and invest in their health and well-being to help prevent issues like burnout. Bunnings people are going to do it. Earlier this year, Bunnings signed an agreement with the Shop Distributive and Allied Employees Association for a four-day work week trial. Now, Bunnings is a globalist control that Wesfarmers do them, and there are some very big fund managers sitting on the Wesfarmers shareholder list. But that's another story. I don't want to get into pulling them apart, but I do know that one. It says iconic hardware retailers' 40,000 employees will now have the option to work a standard 40-hour week condensed into 4 days, so they're going to be going faster, faster. It says these are advances the SDA will be pursuing in upcoming rounds of negotiation with other major retailers, said SDA National Secretary Jared Dwyer. It says this package is good for workers, and this is and for this major retailer alike, setting Bunnings up as a preferred employer in the tight retail market. And then there's another one called EES Shipping. EES Shipping, a medium-sized logistics company based in Perth, decided to trial a four-day work week in July 2022, way back then, people, as supply chains around the world faltered. As of June this year, its shorter week was still in action. I wonder if that's the 180-100 one or the less pay one. It says, in 2022, we're starting to see cracks within our industry, Managing Director Brian Hack, what a great name, told Swinburne University of EES Shipping's decision to implement a four-day work week. People were burning out. Truck drivers were just walking out the door, and I really didn't want to see that happen here. Are they getting a pay cut? Is that what you did? Are you saving money? I don't know. It says, Melbourne-based software business Our Community, great name, which provides training and technical assistance to not-for-profits and social enterprises, first adopted a four-day work week in mid-2022. It says Managing Director Dennis Moriarty said the initiative was so successful it was instated permanently after a six-month trial. I can't even think of a downside, he told the ABC. We are now an employer of choice. We've reduced turnover and have 37% less sick leave. He says, I can proudly say we are more prosperous and our employers are more prosperous. Well, of course they're going to have less sick pay because they're already having a day off a week. So, you know, most people aren't sick. People still don't get that. and it says here, I love the picture of Bunnings Warehouse. I've got all these people with masks on staring out at the cameras. Just hardly ridiculous people. I remember that's where you got jabbed in the car park of Bunnings. Remember that when they were jabbing them all up? You could just line up at the sausage sizzle to get your 10th jab through the Bunnings Warehouse. It's got, just to finish up, it says, You're Creative. The name of the company. This Brunswick design agency also adopted a four-day work week after a successful trial that began in August last year. Client and operations director Liz Indran said the company saw instant improvements in staff morale and productivity. I can't imagine going back, she told the ABC. It says, when we started, we thought there would be teething issues. There was a few, but not as many as was expected. Now, there's another company called, I'll just see how many companies are. People, I'm actually at the end of the podcast, and it's quite a huge list, actually. It's a really big list. So let's just say, people, there are a lot of companies. I think I'm going to look at, I'll see if I'll pull one out. I just saw a music one there, and I might look at that. There's a lot. There's a company called Music Health. This will be interesting. Music Health is a company behind Vera, a music wellness tool that aims to improve the health of the elderly. The company offers a four-day work week at 100% salary. Most of the Music Health team takes Fridays off, though 5 days work may be needed during busier weeks. So they still, see what I mean? They still, oh, hang on, mate. No, you've done your 40 hours. We may need you for the fifth day at another 10 hours. I'm just saying, people, if it gets that flexible, it could easily go the other way, as I just said, when they get needed during the busy weeks. So I don't think it's ever going to get that busy. I think that's just a bit of a carrot dangling in the air, futile attempt. I think really what they're going to do is knock us down to like 3 days a week for less pay. So you might as well say you're virtually getting the dole. And that's pretty much close to, hang on, isn't that what Elon wanted? A universal basic income. Might have to do a story on that next week, because I think that's what this morphs into. It's exactly what he wanted. Then they can control you very easily from birth to death. And that's right, you will actually own nothing. But I'm not sure about the happy part. I'm really not sure about that part. Anyway, yeah, I'm flicking through a lot of these companies and they're not really like factories and places like that. They're just, you know, one's a healthcare company, healthcare software company. So you can see that that can be flexible. Another one's Market Digitally, an agency with digital marketing consultation. Then you've got Versa, a digital transformation agency. You can see the sort of jobs that are doing this, people. The Usability Hub, a remote user research platform. And then you've got Raisely, an online fundraising platform. One called Bugherd, it's a website feedback provider. InDebt is a new kind of debt collection agency. All these ones you can do remotely on PCs all over the place. You don't need to be in the office, so of course they're going to make the work hours flexible. But you'll be contactable 24/7, don't worry about that. It says Symbiotia, website and app builder, well, planner of the apps. Then you've got Look Ahead, which is a technical recruitment firm, and another one called Truey, a Brisbane-based tech and consulting company. See what I mean? You can see the sort of people that are attracted to these sort of companies for these reasons. Geomotion installs and monitors structural, environmental and geotechnical instrumentation for assets and civil engineering. And then you've got Things for Humans. It's a game studio, a video game studio behind PC and Switch game Video World. You've got the Walk Agency, a marketing agency. House of Brand, not to be confused with Russell Brand, but the House of Brand, a B Corp certified brand consultancy. Tractor Ventures, a strategic financier for tech companies. So you can see all this stuff is online, type jobs, and that's why they can do the flexibility of it. Well, as I said earlier, these jobs that sort of can't do that, where they're locked into a time to manufacture something. Like you couldn't go to China and say, right, 4-day week. I mean, they're working 8 days a week, you know, 15 hours a day, and they've got the horse whip. You can't do that there. That would just be crazy. It'd be like they'd all be in their value shifts would start to get in the way of Xi Jinping's global takeover of the world as the military police of the planet. It wouldn't happen if you could suddenly just wander off into the sunset whenever you felt like it with your value shift, as it was. Anyway, people, look, I'm at the end of the podcast, but I will look into the universal basic income because it's going to tie in with the World Economics Forum stripping your house away from you and turning it into a rental for all these immigrants that are moving around the world even quicker than they were before for the great big melting pot that lowers us all down from the first world into the third world. It's really what they want to do, people. Best way to control you from birth to death. Anyway, people, I'm at the end of the podcast. This is the Conspiracy Oz podcast for Tuesday, the 14th of November, 2023. Thanks for listening. Au revoir and out.